This is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Good morning, sports fans. Good to have you back here on the air as we do things on Locks of the Week Radio. Hope you had a great Independence Day weekend. I'm glad to see you all listening in again, once as we always do. It's really just good to be back, to talk sports with you for a little bit, and get into all the finer details. But, you know, a couple of things I wanted to tell you first. First of all, it is a privilege for me and for all of you and for everybody here to be living in this fine nation of ours, the United States of America. And anytime we come around to July 4th, I always think about what all the people did, our forefathers who signed the Declaration of Independence, this many soldiers who fought wars from year after year, decade after decade, every generation, going back to colonial times when we had the American Revolution and going from there. There are a lot of people who gave up lives, blood, and heart to give us the freedom we have today. Never forget that. Independence Day is independence for us all, whether you like it or not. Whether you feel that the country has wronged you in some way, or whether you feel that you are not getting a fair shake with society, the fact remains we all are celebrating many freedoms here if you listen from within the 48 states and Alaska and Hawaii. We must always remember the many, many sacrifices that many men, women, and even children made to bring us the freedoms we enjoy today. Happy Independence Day, belatedly from Dave in the City. Well, besides that, you know, hope you were very, very, very studious during the Independence Day holiday. I hope you had a good time, but you didn't go crazy either. As they say in the commercials, drink responsibly, celebrate. Boy, we're really into summer now. We're into July. It just goes fast like that. We went through, I think, one of the slowest periods of sports. That's the 2 weeks between the NBA Finals and the All-Star Game. And in those 2 weeks, you end up having a lot of things to think about, but no actual action. You get some meaningless baseball games and even more meaningless NFL news. The best thing you could look forward to is NBA off-season notes. And boy, did we get some. Wow. Wow, did we ever get some. But we'll get to that in a minute. First, we need to talk about what happened with Steve McNair. Steve McNair was shot and killed on Saturday. Amazingly tragic news in Tennessee. And it's a very sad and very strange story. It turns out that, according to Teresa M. Walker of the Associated Press, McNair was shot twice in the head and two more times in the chest on Saturday. Now, they weren't sure, the authorities weren't, whether this was a suicide or a homicide, but the initial reports say that it was, in fact, a homicide, so there was foul play involved. And strangely, he was in a room with a 20-year-old lady who apparently was his, quote, friend. Now, the thing about that is, Steve McNair was married and had children. So clearly, McNair's family, whether it be his brother or his actual wife and his child and his other children, nephews, nieces, aunts and uncles, they all were probably wondering, what is that 20-year-old woman doing in the picture? But that's not important right now. The important thing is, we've really lost a big NFL star. He hadn't really been doing much on the field lately. We know that the last time he was really effective playing football was in 2006 when he led the Titans. Excuse me, I'm sorry. He led the Ravens to the playoffs in 06. He even had a home game in the divisional round. I should check that. No, wait a minute. I should check that. But anyway, he led them to the playoffs in 2006, only to fall to the Indianapolis Colts. That was the last we ever really saw him take a prominent role on an NFL team. Now, since then, he hasn't really played much. He was on the bench for most of last season when Joe Flacco did most of the work. But you still remember Steve McNair. He was Air McNair. He played for the Titans for so many years. And he was the face of that franchise. Quite literally, he had a big face. But he was heart and soul, and he still meant a lot to the Titans, even up to this weekend. And so, obviously, the Titans, clearly distraught by the whole thing. And you just look at the ownership group at Tennessee, the ownership group at Baltimore, too. I mean, what can you say? It's really just startling. It's as shocking a death as I've seen in sports. And well, I hate to say it, but not that long of a time, but certainly it's as shocking as we've seen during this course of this year. It's always worse when it's an active player and a prominent one at that, and Steve McNair certainly was. We always have debates about McNair. Is he going to make the Hall of Fame? Is he good enough to become one of the NFL's greatest quarterbacks of all time? You know, the probable answer is no, but he meant a lot. He'd done a lot. He'd been a very good, solid player for many years. Is he a little overrated? I guess so, but the thing is, I think what he did, though, was he was definitely a good leader. And that's no dispute. He was the leader of the team when he was with Tennessee, and I think he was the leader of that club when he played under center in Baltimore. I mean, even his agent was badly distraught after the death of Steve McNair, and the agent I speak of is Buss Cook. And all he said was, "It doesn't make any sense. I don't know what to say." And that ends the quote. And how must you feel if you are Michelle McNair, the wife of Steve McNair? Not only is your husband now dead. Oh, I mean, it's so sad. But not only is he dead, but he's dead and under the suspicion of adultery. I can't really think of, I mean, how terrible that she must be. And the entire McNair family, and meaning Steve's brother, I believe his name is Fred, and other folks from the McNair family are on their way already, and they may already be there, trying to console the remainder of Steve McNair's immediate family to get them to cope. And that's great to hear, great to see. It's just unbelievable what you see here. McNair is one of the good guys. I mean, McNair, call it what you will with this relationship with this 20-year-old woman, who apparently was Sasha Kazemi, I think is her name. Oh, gosh. I mean, she was shot to death, too. The 20-year-old girl, shot in the head once. And, I mean, who knows? And who knows the whole story? I mean, that's going to surface, I think, down the road. But we just got to, wow. It's mind-rattling. I mean, people tell you about it, and you don't even believe it. That's how I felt when I first learned about the news. It couldn't even be real. And it just never made sense to me, the way that things work in this universe of ours. Now, I can't go out and canonize Steve McNair. I mean, he was obviously in some condition with some kind of a romantic, some kind of an adulteress, I believe. So he's no saint. But I think he was a good guy. I mean, you never really know with a professional athlete, because we don't know any of these guys personally. But his actions do speak for themselves quite a bit. And, you know, things he did, for example, when Hurricane Katrina hit, he helped he helped out with the aid. Well, he donated food, water, and clothes, and he paid for 3 football camps for children himself this year. So he was definitely a big giver to the community. By the way, thanks to Teresa M. Walker for those details out of the AP report. I mean, I'm going to mirror basically what the agent Buzz Cook said. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't, but on the other hand, we don't know the whole story. But the story will come to us later. The point is now, now we've lost a huge part of the NFL, Steve McNair. Yeah, I mean, the fact is, he really wasn't really going to be a part of, too much of a part of the, of any actual NFL team as far as playing. But you had to think that, you know, eventually he would have retired, and he was still given so much to the Titans organization, possibly the Ravens, and to Tennessee and Nashville, and to his families, and to people everywhere. Because that seemed to have been what he had been doing throughout his career. And who could forget, when McNair made that big drive in Super Bowl 34, he went down the field and nearly won the game. He had this great play with scant seconds remaining to save the game. Save the game. Fourth down. This was it. He just eludes like 3 guys, passes the ball, and puts them in position to win with, I think it was about 7 seconds left in the game. Then you obviously know the rest. He gets the pass off to Jerome Dyson. And Dyson stretches out with his hand with Mike. I think it was Mike Brown. No, I don't think it was Mike Brown. But some guy from the Rams tackles him tackles him at his feet, grabs his feet. Dyson stretches out. He's a yard short. Could have tied the game. Thrilling ending, certainly. But there you go. I mean, it's just, as once you see that memory, and then it comes goes from that to a shocking, terrifying, depressing death at the hands of who knows who. And we will find out, I believe, someday who the who was. And we will find out what the whole story was. But McNair is gone. It's sad. I don't know him personally, but I do think that he did give a lot to the NFL. He did give a lot to Tennessee. He gave a lot to the Titans. He gave a lot to the Ravens. He gave a lot to Baltimore. He gave a lot. And now he's lost his life. I wouldn't say he gave it. It was taken from his hands way too soon. We know that. But we don't know the whole... But the bottom line is, whatever the story is or how it got there, he's gone. Break time, then back after this. This is Dave in the City.
There's no time for us. There's no place for us. What is this thing that builds our dreams, yet slips away from us? There's no chance for us. It's all decided for us.
Welcome back in the city. I'm Dave Medina here, talking to you about sports. You know, it's just I'm still rattled a little bit by the Steve McNair tragedy. I mean, it is very tragic in any way you put it. You know, you just can't think about anything other than that. It's just crazy. I think that's the word that seems to pop up a lot, but with me and friends of mine when we talk about a guy like Steve McNair dying like that, getting shot to death. Sheesh. In an apartment, Nashville, a condominium. Sheesh. Crazy. All right, we'll try to move on here as we go forward. You know, a lot of stuff has been happening over the last week, and I'll tell you, the reason I haven't really had a chance to come on as much as I normally do is it's been a lot of other stuff going on related to my other jobs, so I haven't had a chance to really get into podcasting. Unfortunately, it's been generally slow, but lately it's been really picking up, and what really has really set the ball rolling with sports lately, among other things, the NBA, wow, its off-season has been just one of the most amazing off-seasons in recent memory. And to think everybody was looking forward to 2010 as the big off-season in the NBA. I mean, people have been writing up stories about it. People, the off-season of a lifetime is here. Look at what's been transpiring over the last 2 weeks. I don't know if I even had time to cover when Shaq got traded to the Cavs. That was an interesting deal. Kind of precipitated. We saw it coming. We sort of saw that Cleveland had to make another move in response for Orlando. Cleveland always makes moves in response to other things. Cleveland just doesn't know how to manage a team. So they go out and they get this 37-year-old Shaquille O'Neal to join in with LeBron James and this other ragtag group. They sent back three other scrubs to Phoenix, which will all expire at the end of the year. Or sometime sooner. Point is, the Suns are like, thank you very much for letting us have our cap space back. And now the Cavs are sort of a do-or-die situation with LeBron. They seem to be under the impression, and I think this is probably accurate, that the Cavs will not have LeBron James after the 2010 season. Pretty accurate assumption. But that being said, going after a 37-year-old Shaquille O'Neal, a guy that's already on his last legs, but a guy who I admit will probably be pretty effective in that system. But the fact remains, a 37-year-old guy, he's not getting any younger. LeBron and Shaq, it works out pretty well. Of course, it does prove once and for all that Shaq needs a transcendent guard player to make him function properly. Gee, so funny. Shaq seems to be so much more dominant when he has a guy that happens to be one of the best guards in the game. Top 10. Most dominant center in history, NBA history, sure. Give me a break. I used to love Shaq. I mean, I still love Shaq. He's an enjoyable, engaging human being. He has a great line, great with the media. And he gives a lot to the community, too. But I think he's overstated himself a little bit in his whole bit about being the most dominant guy in the game. He doesn't really play that up anymore because he knows. He's not that good anymore. But, you know, I've been thinking about that this week. So Shaq's now with LeBron, obviously the hottest, best player in the game today, right now, as far as guy who's really rising to the charts. I think he's the best player, or at least the guy playing the best basketball of anybody at the moment. Yeah, he's got no mid-range game, he's got no long-range game, and he certainly doesn't have the greatest defense ever, but LeBron is playing the best basketball of anybody. And the fact is, I mean, he can really dominate in many ways. Like, he can rush up the court. Who's going to stop him? He's so big and fast at the same time. I mean, you can't stop him. He can jump really high. He's got such intense power. You see his dunks. They're no gimmies. I mean, he just dunks the ball like that. So LeBron, even though he's got some shortcomings, doesn't mean he can't improve them, one. And two, I don't dock him for those. I think he's playing the best basketball in the NBA currently. But come on, Shaq. I mean, it's great to see him make another run at the title. He's been asking for his trade out of Phoenix. Blah, blah, blah. But the guy is a fair weather player to the nth degree. He can't take losing. Which I don't blame him for. I mean, that's fine. But, man, I mean, you know, he keeps having to make all these special arrangements for him to be effective. You know, if you're supposed to be the most dominant player in the game, how come you can't change the culture of the basketball team yourself? Seems to me that when you take out the best guard on the team, or one of the five best guards in the NBA at the time that you played with him, not so dominant. How funny how that works. You can't consider yourself the most dominant center in basketball and then suddenly require one of the five best point guards in the NBA in order for you to function. Didn't seem so dominant with Steve Nash, did you? So weird. Just incredible, you know? Even when he was with Orlando, he had Penny Hardaway for most of his career there. And at the time, Hardaway was a pretty good player. I would say, if he wasn't Michael Jordan, but he was definitely in the same table. If the five best guards in the NBA were a table, like the poker table, Hardaway would have been at the end. So you see, he was in the table. So that amuses me. Shaquille O'Neal and the Cavs. I think it's going to work short-term, long-term, certainly not. Will he have enough energy to get through the playoffs? I don't know. That's a 50-50 shot. But you know, at the end of it, there's going to be a lot of sniping. And you never know. I mean, Shaquille could drag down the whole team. Or he could carry them all the way to the championship. We just don't know. But we've seen both. We've seen it go both ways. We've seen him tear apart, not him personally, but certainly his style really tore apart what the Phoenix Suns had. Not to mention D'Antoni left anyway, which really wasn't a winning formula. Play a lot of offense, no defense. It's not going to win a championship anyway, so whatever. But we also seen him go to another team that was already pretty good, and then be the extra step that carried them to the championship, a la the Miami Heat. It took them a couple years, but they got it. But he is 37, so we don't know how truly effective he'll be on that team. I know that he's at a point where he's willing to give up touches now, which is fine. But I just don't see how Shaq is going to end up being the missing piece for the Cavs. They have a lot of missing pieces. They got to get a better coach. They got to get a better strategy. They got to utilize their players better. They got to get more shooters. They got to get people who can score points. The Cavs can't score points. LeBron is not a whole team. They got to score some points. So Shaq will help with that. I think he'll help score some points. Is he going to hold up throughout the course of the year? No, but they'll probably baby him through the season, so that might help. But they got to do better. I mean, they have a lot of work to do. But all their moves are just in reaction to something. Well, they got a center, so we'll get one too. Oh, they got a point guard, we'll get one too. Make your own decisions! Oh, the Cavs just annoy me that way. And don't tell me, oh, well, they must have somewhat good management. They got LeBron. Yeah, well, the number one pick in the draft and the most talked about player of our age. You'd have to be an idiot not to pick a guy like LeBron James with the first pick in the draft. Don't give me that. General management gets zero credit for LeBron James. Zero. Even the Clippers would have been smart enough to pick LeBron if they had the first pick in the draft. Just unbelievable. Nobody's dumb enough to pass on LeBron in the draft. So you can't give him credit for that. Other than that, they really haven't done much. I think I did like the Mo Williams pickup. That was not bad. But all these other guys, so marginal. They just don't know how to build a basketball team. Danny Ferry and company over there in Cleveland. They just don't get it. So that's Cleveland. Then, after that, as if the Cleveland Cavs had like 2 minutes of fame, thinking, well, maybe they'd be the team to rise up and beat the Magic and then beat the Celtics and then beat the Lakers and then beat whoever else was in their way to get the championship. It all fell flat in his face like a cake that was rising and a toothpick was punched into it in the middle of baking. Foof! Just fell flat right on the plate. And why? Because the Lakers one-upped them big time. They didn't one-up them. They, 12-upped them. They hit the one-up machine over there. Got a bunch of extra lives. They're up at 99 lives because of this move. How does Mitch Kupchak do it? And what he did was he basically swapped Ariza for Ron Artest. See, the idea was for the Lakers to try to go after Trevor Ariza and Lamar Odom in the offseason. But the odds were that they weren't going to keep them both. And many folks said, well, if you can't keep them both, we'll keep Ariza. We got to make sure that we have that energy in our defense. We want to make sure we get that hustle guy, the guy that can be all over the court. So they said, okay, Ariza, here you go. We're going to go ahead and get you going. But if you were smart and if you were paying attention to basketball this season, you knew that Trevor Ariza was doing very well, but in his function, which was as an energy guy off the bench in limited minutes to get the team off its foot. But to expect him to do anything more would have been unreasonable. So you can't expect to pay a guy more than $5 or $6 million a year just to do that. And yes, Trevor certainly deserves a payday. He's had a great year. But in that role. So the Lakers probably made that known, but then Trevor was scoffed at the idea that he would be paid the mid-level exception. So the Lakers said, adios. Don't let the door hit your ass on the way out. And he said, all right, I'm going to go see if some other team can pay me a lot more money. They didn't. And so he ended up just kind of sitting there. And he settled for a deal with the Houston Rockets. But in the middle of all that, the Lakers negotiated a 3-year, $18 million deal with Ron Artest. So they basically got rid of Ariza, which in and of itself would be kind of a step down for LA. And then they got better. They got Ron Artest to join the Lakers as their fourth guy on the team. Their fourth option, an all-star, a guy that plays tremendous defense. Yes, a guy that's kind of lost his marbles, but a guy that plays tremendous defense and he really didn't cause a ton of problems over in there in Houston. No incidents, no on-court fights, really, other than that scuffling he had with Kobe in the semifinals last year, or this year, I guess. I mean, and they signed him for about the same that they would have signed Ariza for, more or less. I mean, that's just amazing. Amazing. Number one, that Ron Artest was willing to settle for that much money, or that little money. And two, that Mitch Kupchak had this deal in his pocket, and pretty much had all the leverage, apparently, on Trevor Ariza. I mean, this is unbelievable. Oh, I mean, it takes two to tango, and I think Ron Artest really made some concessions to make this work. And the big reason why, I think, he's good friends with Kobe. We've heard this before. He certainly is good friends with Ron Artest. Lamar Odom. They're both from the borough of Queens. So there you go. There you go. I mean, this is just unbelievable. This is incredible what we've seen now from the Lakers now. In the last three seasons, they picked up. This is unbelievable. This is ridiculous. This is just sickening. When you get, especially if you're on other teams, if you're a fan of other teams, they picked up Pau Gasol, Ron Artest, and then they already had Kobe Bryant and Lamar Odom and Derek Fisher too. When you think about it, I mean, what do you say to all that? That's insane what they've done. So now they have, I think, four. Well, I don't know if Odom had made the All-Star team this year. If he didn't, then that means that he still hasn't made the All-Star team. But outside of him, you got three genuine All-Stars on the team, on the starting five. How often do you get three-fifths of your starting lineup All-Star quality players? And now I don't mean, well, they were All-Stars 5 years ago. No, I mean, they could make the All-Star team this year. it hasn't happened in a really long time. So you just gotta give a lot of credit to the Lakers ownership group for making this happen. Whew. And B, just scratch your head if you're other teams, like, wow. Really? We let this one get away? And you know, I've talked with Jacob Rosales, our contributor, in depth about this, and he basically felt, man, the Lakers would have had no drive to do any to make a run in the championship this year, and now they got Artest, and that's out the window. Now they're totally going to be really energized to get a title, and all that intensity that we always were complaining about, there it is. Ron Artest helps energize the team. Intensity, boom, gone, done. There it is. It just boggles the mind how amazingly the Lakers have constructed themselves and turned themselves around after this offseason, which we thought was going to be a hangover season. It could still be, but the odds are pretty good that they're going to be pretty good all year long, barring injury. Because, you know, there could be injuries. But, wow, I mean, can you believe that? And I think I've said this before, it's a tribute to the Lakers organization as a whole, because they put themselves in a good position to have free agents really want to go to the Lakers. Like, they go out of their way to join the Lakers club, and it's happened over time after time. Whether it's guys like Michael Thompson, or even if you want to count it, you can call Gary Payton, Karl Malone, taking some serious pay cuts in order to be a part of that team. And then certainly going forward, you know, luring Pau Gasol in a trade, and then getting Ron Artest. It makes you realize just what the Lakers have done to establish this empire, and now how every player wants to be a Laker. It's crazy, but very remarkable at the same time. You know, you can't really make the comparison with the Lakers that the Yankees have. Oh, well, they get all the good players. The difference is that they have a salary cap in the NBA. You know? So they can't just outspend everybody else. The luxury tax would be astronomical if it happened. But the Lakers, something about that team, you know, and franchise and the colors and the logo and the court and Staples Center just really draws players to become a part of that phenomenon. And that includes LA too, as a whole. It's city. The city itself. Big entertainment, capital, huge. So now you got a team that's stacked. But to join them, lots of teams have made big moves, and a lot of them are good. I'll just go over them briefly because we've spent a lot of time already on our test. Started off, I believe, goes back about a week and a half ago, I think, before we even got into any of this. The Spurs landed Richard Jefferson, who is a very, very solid player. I mean, good, especially defensively. He's very good. So that's a good fit for the Spurs. I don't remember the exact terms of the deal, but the point is, they have Richard Jefferson. That'll help them a good deal. The Spurs still have a lot of question marks, though. A lot of their players are getting old. All of their key components. And then their scrub immobile Euro players who basically stand around and shoot threes. They're basically trying to retool them. They sent away Roberto in the move to get Jefferson. Yeah, they really need to retool that section because they hadn't been doing much that last season. So the Spurs have some work to do. They do. They have a lot of questions to ask and answer. But they made a good step. They put themselves going in the right direction. So getting Jefferson helps them a good deal. It's a good move. The Detroit Pistons got Ben Gordon, signed him to a 5-year deal, I believe worth $50 million. That was a good deal too for Detroit. They did need to get somebody going. They needed to get somebody to fill in for what was Allen Iverson, but they never fully intended him to be on the team long term anyway. So they needed another guy to kind of fill in. You knew that Rip Hamilton was getting old. Stuckey certainly was going to be good at the point. So Ben Gordon, that's their shooting guard now. There it is. Guard forward, whatever. But Ben Gordon signs for that deal. It's a good move for Detroit. We saw it coming from the beginning because, you know, we knew that when they made the Iverson trade, it wasn't to get Iverson. Hell no. The point of getting that trade was to get rid of the cap space that Chauncey Billups represented and clear some money off the books and start fresh. And that's pretty much what happened. And so it was a wise decision, and I think it's really worked out well. And Joe Dumars, I knew it from the moment he made that trade. He knew what he was doing the whole time. He had this whole thing mapped out in his head. Good for him. I'm a big fan of Joe Dumars. He's been good with that Detroit Pistons team for many years. He's made good decisions throughout his career as a GM. And so now the Pistons look like a team that could compete. I don't know if they're going to make a run to like a semifinal round or win the first round. I think they're still probably a lower seeded team. But they're going to improve certainly, and they can make more moves in the offseason to become better. Rasheed Wallace was on the Pistons last season. He's getting old. He will no longer be with the Pistons, if all the accounts are correct. And what happened was Rasheed Wallace is working out an agreement to sign a short-term deal with the Boston Celtics. In fact, the Celtics have offered a contract to Rasheed Wallace. The word is he will accept, and that helps the Celtics get back to where they need to be. It's a good move for the Boston Celtics, and why not, you know? You got some aging players. You might as well get another spark plug off the bench, a guy that can shoot the three-pointer, usually. And a guy that certainly is going to be in your face. And that's what the Celtics do. They get in your face. It's a good move for Boston. And then the one that really, the laugher. This is good. Oh, this is fun. The laugher of the offseason so far in the NBA is Hedo Turkoglu. Hedo Turkoglu is unbelievable. He plays very well. He's a tough player. Plays tough. Doesn't give any quarter. He's a solid, good player. Clutch player. You can get baskets at the end of the fourth quarter. Take big three-pointers. He's been there before. He'll be there again. And wouldn't you know, he had this deal worked out with Portland. The Portland Trail Blazers. And he would have been an incredible fit for the Blazers. He would have been exactly what they needed. They need some experience. And he didn't know Turkoglu. I mean, he's got experience up his nose. Had all those big, long, deep playoff series with the Sacramento Kings. Had that NBA Finals run with the Magic. The guy can play. The guy's been there before. And he means it. Got a lot of heart, too. Not afraid of anybody. So you had the deal worked out, you know? Friday night, deal worked out. I got a call from our friend Mark Perez. You know, like, he's all excited about Turkoglu. I was, too. It would have been interesting. It would have been a fun team to watch. Still is. Trailblazers still have a lot of good players. Can't forget Brandon Roy and Aldridge. And you can't forget maybe Travis Outlaw, Rudy Fernandez, Greg Oden. They got a lot of good players. Steve Blake. Got so many players on that team that can be very, very good. But, man, they needed that experience because you saw what happened there against the Houston Rockets. They just didn't. They were not experienced. They'll get more experience this year. And Turkoglu would have really, really solidified that starting group. He really would have helped them so much. And what happens the next day? Friday, it's all worked out. They had, you know, it was almost set up. ESPN reports it, which means nothing because ESPN will report anything whether it's true or not. You know that's true. It's happened before. And then the next morning, boom. He's on Toronto. Toronto? Toronto? He's on the Toronto Raptors. How did this happen? It's the biggest. It is the biggest. It is the biggest. It's the biggest punk job since Ashton Kutcher put like a prank on some guy he knew on MTV. It's just unbelievable. The biggest practical. Is it a practical joke? It could have ended up on that one Dick Clark show like 20 years ago. I mean, did he just do this? He said, I'm going to Toronto, and then looked at the camera and was like, gotcha! Oh my goodness. I mean, it really sucks for Blazers fans. I mean, that's just not right. How did this happen? I mean, the difference the Blazers had a $50 million contract to sign Hedo Hookerloo. They had the cap room, certainly, to make that offer. The $50 million is a good deal for a guy that age. Turgulu was, well, is in his 30s. But he gives up that deal, which is obvious. It was a better team, by the way. The Blazers are a much better team than Toronto. I'm sorry, but even with Bosch in there, forget it. The Blazers are so much better, it's not even funny. Toronto instead offers them $53 million, so it couldn't have been the money. The difference is $3 million? I don't think so. I don't think it's just the money. And as we found out through TNT's David Aldridge, it in fact was not the money at all. What happened, apparently, was that, well, they say that Turgulu liked the idea of playing in Toronto because it was a more cosmopolitan city. Okay. And apparently, the deal was, well, his family somehow convinced him that it would be cooler to be in a city with more diversity, and more specifically with a bigger Turkish population. Well, that's weird. And I guess he and his wife enjoyed Toronto, this says, according to Aldridge, which already appeals to the two of them. And he loves how apparently the Raptors have a roster full of international players. Are you kidding me? International players? That's a lame excuse because, one, the Blazers already have international players, too. I don't really understand that point. That's a pretty lame excuse if you ask me. But I think it was Toronto that led them there. It certainly wasn't money. Because you take away, you know, you calculate the numbers. You calculate the numbers, man. And you go with the currency exchange rate and taxes. The Portland deal might have actually been more money for him, realistically. Portland doesn't have a state tax. So, honestly, he was going to get more money in Portland, bottom line money. Like, his take-home would have been more. Clearly, the money had nothing to do with it. It was apparently the lure of Toronto and his wife having convinced him to get there. Wow. I mean, just, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable. It is the biggest last-second oops. And there are already comparisons of being of the Blazers being left at the altar. Oh, that's a scene. That is a scene, all right. No question. Sheesh. I mean, that just really just makes me laugh so hard. I mean, that's just terrible. And poor Portland. I mean, that was the move that they were going to make. They really can't make any other move. Everywhere else are set. They don't have anybody else coming out in free agency that really would fill the role the way Hedo Turgulu would have. Unreal. Well, that's it for the NBA. Huge offseason so far, you can tell. The one thing that remains, a couple things. Well, we did find out that Phil Jackson was going to come back to the Lakers to coach. So that's out of the way. Now to see if Lamar Odom decides to re-sign with LA after all. If they do, then the Lakers are practically unbeatable. If he doesn't, then, you know, it's a lesser team, but they are still going to be pretty good, and at least they'll have defense covered. Bynum's turning out to be a decent enough defensive player because at least he gives hard fouls. So he's got work to do, but he can get better. And then Artest is spoken for, and Kobe's spoken for. And Fish is spoken for to a degree because he's good at taking charges, and he's in there. So most of that starting five is spoken for defensively. That means that if Odom doesn't sign, well, the Lakers really aren't going to be tremendous, but they'll be, you know, they'll be okay. They'll be like a decent team. But if they do re-sign Odom, who brings so much versatility to the court offensively, and because he now comes off the bench for most of those games, he ends up having a pretty decent role. He can become the spark plug, and it's worked out pretty well for him. With Odom, the Lakers become an amazing team. With Artest too, with Kobe, with all the rest. So that's the big story. Is Odom going to re-sign with LA? He wants to. You can certainly tell he loves playing there. That's no question. Now he's got his buddy Ron Artest there. Kobe's buddy too, Ron Artest. The odds are pretty good that he'll sign. So some team would have to come up to him with a huge load of money in order to lure Odom away. So we'll see. Should be interesting to find out. Now, let's get on to stuff that happened here in the city as we listen in today. What happened in sports over the weekend? There are two big tournaments that finished on Sunday, and one of them was historic, and the other one was actually pretty intense. Wimbledon. Another fantastic tennis match to decide the gentlemen's final between Roger Federer and surprising entrant Andy Roddick from the United States, Omaha, Nebraska, to be precise. The two of them squared off, and you thought, well, okay, Federer's going to dominate this thing easy. But it didn't happen. Andy Roddick won the first set. And then he nearly won the second when he was up 6-2 in the tiebreak. Because it went to a tiebreak, and he was up 6-2 in the tiebreak. He only needed one more point. But then Roger Federer scored six straight points to save the set. And then Roger Federer won the next set. I think it was also 7-6 on a tiebreak. And so it was on. And Federer had Roddick by the throat. But Roddick did a great job. He served so well. He held serve on every point that he had except the last one. We'll get to that later. But an incredible streak of holding serve pretty much every time he had the ball. So Roddick wins the fourth set, and the fifth set gets into play. It's even, obviously, because both guys are holding serve throughout the whole set. And it just keeps going, and it keeps going, and it keeps going. And the fifth set does not have a tiebreak system, so they just play extra games as if they're still playing the set, a regular set. It goes into the teens. Here it's like the 12th. It's like 10 to 10, and 11 to 11. It just goes on and on and on because neither guy would give up a break. But then Andy Roddick lost it. After it was tied 14-14... Andy Roddick gave way in the final game of the fifth set. And that opened the door for Roger Federer to win his 15th Grand Slam final, which is the new high water mark for the professional tennis circuit. It had been 14. Pete Sampras set the mark. Sampras was in attendance at Wimbledon yesterday. And he witnessed a very, very good tennis match. It wasn't as good as the one the year before, or in 2008 when Federer faced Nadal. That was a classic. But it was pretty good, and it was a very, very well-fought tennis match. Very well-fought. So, you know, Sampras was there along with other luminaries, Bjorn Borg, and a Spanish man I don't know the name of. He also was involved, I think, in some of those majors. Oh, tennis royalty in the royal box at Wimbledon. It's fantastic, center court. And they all saw Federer set the new mark, 15 Grand Slam finals in tennis. He now can be considered alone as the all-time winningest Grand Slam event person. Congratulations to Roger Federer for winning the 2009 Wimbledon Championship in the men's and for getting the 15th Grand Slam Championship. A mark that may take a while to get broken again. It's very hard to do. You gotta give Federer a huge amount of credit. Huge! To do that year in and year out, he's played for, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years tops. So that means that he's had to have won at least one championship every year. That's unbelievably hard to do. We see that Federer is getting old, too. For tennis, you getting old means you're in your 30s at all. Like, 31, you're getting old. And so what he's accomplished is truly remarkable. And for that, I give him a tremendous amount of credit and praise. And, you know, he's great. He's a fantastic tennis player. Held off a very game Andy Roddick. And let's give him credit, too. Most of the time, Andy Roddick gets into a big stage and he folds. Not today, not last night, not yesterday. He was good. And he played his heart out. And he had it. And you know, the only thing that stopped him was the greatness of Roger Federer. Just outlasted him. It was a battle of wills, and Federer ultimately won, but it took a long time. It took an hour and 15 minutes, at least, to get through that fifth set. And Federer held on and hung on. I mean, what do you say? I mean, he's been great. And Roddick is absolutely game and a worthy opponent. Major, major credit to Andy Roddick. I think this will build so much confidence for him going forward. He's still fairly young. And he's got a ways to go. He certainly could win another major sometime down the road. And I think that really just made him... It really made Roddick legitimate in my mind as a professional tennis player. Because some people will never do it. Some people never do. But Roddick is now one of those who can say, well, he's won. I think he's won like the U.S. Open. So it's not like he's never won anything. But the point is, him being able to go up toe-to-toe against one of the best players who've ever played tennis in a big final like that and not buckle under the pressure with all the history on the line speaks really well to Andy Roddick's ability to play. So I think that's really was a great feather in his cap and his resume for Andy Roddick. Fantastic. Good day for tennis. No doubt about it. You know, people talking about, well, tennis is so boring. It is. I can't disagree. But that was a good match. And it was it had a good fast pace to it. It went really quickly. That, you know, the last set really was the one was what made it last fairly long. But outside of that, it moved along really well. So yes, tennis can be very proud of itself today. What a day. And it goes without saying that we should end our discussion today with a look at what happened at the AT&T Nationals hosted by one Tiger Woods. And Tiger Woods had a very good final round. And even with Hunter Mahan shooting out of his mind with a 62, minus 8. I mean, who shoots minus 8 in the final round of anything? I mean, that's rare. Tiger Woods still had a very good final round and won the AT&T National and gets his first win since the Arnold Palmer Invitational. So what a day for Tiger Woods. I mean, he played very well, had some big birdies, and who could forget that 20-foot putt in the 16th green, which basically put him ahead for good all by himself. Yes, indeed. I mean, that's a big win for Tiger Woods. Certainly had his father on his mind that day, as they certainly showed on CBS. His father, a big military man, so there was a lot of military presence at this event. And Tiger, you know, what do you say? I mean, Tiger was game. He held on. He made a good comeback. He started the round tied for the lead with Anthony Kim, who really did fall apart a little bit in the middle holes of the round. But Anthony Kim's still very young. He's got a lot to learn. He'll be fine. He's got such potential. Anthony Kim's had his misgivings, but what can you do? I mean, he just was just being too aggressive. You know, he goes for those tee shots. He thinks he can shoot the moon or shoot at the moon. Instead, it goes all the way into the trees, and he has a terrible eye. But, you know, it's not like it's not correctable. Kim's got potential, man. He's good. So, you know, he didn't have his greatest game, final round, but he'll be there. Woods was there. And I tell you, it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was very competitive. Kim was hanging in there for a long time, and then the back nine was really where he fell apart. But Mahan was the one that was nuts. I mean, gee, well, my goodness, he finished at minus 12. But then he didn't play for like another hour and a half. And so he pretty much stood there and waited as Tiger Woods tried to see if he could get that extra birdie, and he did. And that was it. So Tiger Woods wins it. Beautiful day for golf, too. Great win for Tiger. And it's funny, because, you know, it was really entertaining to watch this Tiger Woods National. It was very entertaining. And ironic that it'd be so entertaining, because I enjoyed this more than the U.S. Open. They got a lot of mainstays involved, Vijay Singh, and what is it, Freddie Couples? No, who was it? Fred Funk? No. But, you know, a bunch of guys like that. There's another guy that got an eagle today. It was an incredible shot, too. I enjoyed this more than the U.S. Open. I just can't explain it, honestly, but it just was more fun to watch. So even though it wasn't the major, it was a fun, fun tournament in golf. And I'm glad that I was able to see the last round, and I was glad I was able to follow the other rounds. It was worth it. And so it's a good day to really, you know, promote the game of golf too. And so it was. Well, we're out of time. Thank you for listening here, everybody. I hope you have a great week. Hope you are enjoying your Monday. But until then, we'll come back with more sports talk down the line for the big Tuesday show. But I'm Dave for Dave in the City. We'll see you next time.